Living by God's laws does not, for the most part, summon from any of us any excessive amount of heroism. As a matter of fact, I would believe that most of us, and I'm not really talking about us specifically in this statement because I know this audience is made up of God-fearing individuals, individuals who have counted the cost. You have analyzed your lives and you have decided, hey, I want to follow Jesus at all cost. But our world is in a crisis. I think all of you know that. And we cannot ignore that. Last night, listening to the news, I just sort of sunk to a new low as to why things happen. I heard, listening to a Dallas news station, about a couple of individuals who had taken captive a mentally impaired adult. And they had taken the mentally impaired adult and taken her, it was a woman as I recall, and they had taken her out somewhere and they used her for target practice. And then they killed her. As they were apparently giving testimony as to what they were doing, they were giggling about what they did and why they did it. They did it because they wanted the rush, they said. And I just drove home and I thought, goodness, goodness, goodness. You hear one thing and then you hear another thing that it's worse. And I'm not saying that everything we hear is bad. I'm just saying that I want all of you to realize that even though the world in which we live appears to be pretty good because of the blessings that God gives to us, we have a witness to get out to the world that there's a way of righteousness and a way of life that really does produce a better way of living. We believe in God's laws. We obey God's laws as best we can. All of us know we don't do it perfectly, but at least we're trying. God's laws do not ask us whether we should give our bodies up to be burned, really, do they? God's laws do not ask us whether or not it is permissible to get a divorce. They tell us not to commit adultery. They don't really address whether or not we should have an abortion, and they do not address, or do they address, whether or not we ought to tell a lie to help a friend. Now, I said that in such a way is because I wanted you to realize we don't normally think about things like that, but all those particulars have a foundation in God's laws. We must do as the psalmist did, David did, and we must meditate upon God's laws. Do you ever face a situation where you say, I wonder what God would have me to do? And you wonder what law applies here? Wonder what direction is available to me? It may be that we don't dwell upon God's laws and meditate upon them frequently enough. But let me give you a situation that I ran into the other day, and I'm not going to tell you what I did. Now, afterwards, I may let you know what I did, but I didn't quite know what to do. Maybe some of you'd have just tumbled to it just like that. There were a number of items that were on my mind. I was a little bit fearful about it. It was late at night. It must have been about 8:30. I was in another state. I think it was Nashville, up in the Tennessee area. It stopped to gas up my vehicle. It was while I was gassing up, and it was pitch black dark, because this happened several weeks ago. While I was gassing up, an individual approached me. And he was very unkempt. In fact, he was quite shabby. And immediately I noticed that he had very large sores on his arms and on his hands. It was unmistakable, and they were not painted on there. They were legitimate. They were real. And while I was gassing up the vehicle, he approached me, and he was a very slender build, and he told me this story. He said, look over here, and I looked over there, and here was this really rather old automobile, and he had the hood was up. And he said that he was an individual who was dying with AIDS, and that he was on his way to a hospital to get treatment, and he needed money. And he asked me if I would give him some money. Now, to be honest with you, when it first happened, I was a little bit concerned about the safety of my passengers, my wife and my children. So I was very worried about that. But then I got up there, he got up there with me, and I noticed, well, maybe there's nothing to worry about here. But I began to wonder what I should do. I talked to him, and I asked him some questions to see if there was some legitimacy there. And one of the things that was worrying me about all this is, you know, sometimes life puts limits on your love. Do you know what I mean by that? Because if you don't have any money, you can't help, right? But in this case, I had some extra money on me. And I knew that. And so I thought to myself, wonder what God would have me to do in this situation. So he stood there by my vehicle, and then I went in and paid my gas. I paid for the amount of it, and then came back out. And I was thinking about this all the way in. I was thinking, wonder what I should do. And I put myself in his position. I did all the things that most of us would do. Anyway, I made my decision. And I won't tell you what I did. It's neither here nor there. If you want to ask me afterwards, I'll be happy to share it with you. But what would you have done? And I realize you would have to be in my situation to understand it fully. And you would probably have to be me, having grown up all these years and then been encountered by all the people that approached me, as if the same would apply to you if you were there. I'd have to walk in your shoes. What would you have done? An individual who said he had AIDS, he had the sores to show for it, he had a vehicle that was obviously broken down, and he had a story that he was on his way to get treatment, but I had no way to verify that. What direction does God's law, the Decalogue, take me to answer that and to deal with it? Because I suggest to you that if we dwell upon God's laws long enough and we study what God gave to the children of Israel in depth, we will come to the right answer. Don't you think? If I go back to this illustration which I just shared with you, this terrible incident of this horrible murder that took place in Dallas, Fort Worth, with this mentally impaired adult, I think all of us know immediately, just with a little bit I know, probably what should be done, how this should be dealt with, because the law is very clear on something like that, just assuming there are no other particular circumstances that we're not aware of. Today we are in a crisis in our world. It is a crisis of morals, and I don't want to beat that old drum to death that has been beaten so often, except I don't want to be negligent not to at least say that. But here is where the crisis is. The crisis, brethren, is not in the fact that we are doing things wrong. Human beings have been doing things wrong since Adam and Eve. So there's nothing new there. The crisis is our shared loss of understanding what is right and what is wrong. That's where the crisis is in our country today. In a book entitled The Day America Told the Truth, here are some statistics that I thought were rather discouraging, if not enlightening. I don't know how many of us are affected by these statistics, but I want to share them because I don't think you're in here. But the majority of our country is. So again, the crisis is not in that everyone is all of a sudden doing things wrong. The crisis is we don't understand what is right and what is wrong. And yet, there's no reason for that. In this book, then, here are some questions, actually 10 commandments that seem to rule today. And you see they are a takeoff of the Decalogue or the Ten Commandments, which most of us probably know by heart. The first question was, how many people don't see the point in observing the Sabbath? And this doesn't even pertain to the Saturday Sabbath, but just to a Sabbath. How many people do you think don't see any point in observing the Sabbath? 77%. That's pretty high. How many said, I will steal from those who won't? And this was interesting because, you see, when you steal, people can break it down into categories. They'll say, well, I can steal from someone who has nothing, and they would most likely not do that, or maybe they would, depends on how corrupt they are. Or somebody will say, I will steal from somebody who will not miss it. 74% said they would not hesitate to steal from someone who wouldn't miss it. Now, that makes people, you know why now some people don't wear expensive watches, they don't wear their rings, they don't wear their jewelry, because people will run up and steal it from them. They'll yank it off their neck or pull it off their hand because they'll think, well, they, of course, number one, it's got a lot of value to it, but they also think, well, they won't miss it. I will lie when it suits me so long as it doesn't cause any real damage. 64%. I will drink and I will drive if I feel that I can handle it. Now, this one is very important. I was surprised that this was not higher. But I will drive and drive if I feel that I can handle it. I know my limit. 56% of those surveyed said that they would do that. I will cheat on my spouse because, after all, given the chance, he or she will do the same. 53%. I will procrastinate at work and do absolutely nothing about one full day of every five. It's standard operating procedure. 50% of those surveys said that that was their attitude. I will use recreational drugs, 41%. I will cheat on my taxes to a point. I got a chuckle out of that because if you go too far, you know where you'll end up. You'll end up, so people say, up to a point, I will try to cheat. And that's 30%. And the last two are a little bit sexually sensitive, and I don't mean to embarrass anyone, but I think you should be aware of these statistics, especially if you have a young person, a young adult at home. I will put my lover at risk of disease. I sleep around a bit, but who doesn't? 31%. And the last one, technically, I may have committed date rape, but I know that she wanted it. 20%. Now, those statistics are alarming. They're a little bit shocking to me, because that lets me know the mentality that's out there that's around us. And as I consider these things, I want to ask you this. How do we know, as God's people, and where do we look for God's will? The laws that we live by. Does God speak to all of us privately or mind to mind or just heart to heart? Or is there something that's much more obvious for us? Do we have to go begging for the Word of God to tell us what to do? The answer is absolutely no. What is it that Solomon said over in the end of the book of Ecclesiastes? He said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Do you remember what that was? He tells you to do two things. I'd like to remind you of those two things today. First of all, to fear God. And secondly, you are to keep His commandments. Why? This is the entire whole duty of man. Is it difficult to keep the commandments? I don't think so. No. Is it difficult to keep them perfectly? Yes, it is difficult to keep them perfectly. But you know, you can keep the commandments by just being asleep. Can't you? No? No, you can't, because you're not keeping the Sabbath day, you're not honoring God. But you know what? You can keep most of God's commandments if you are asleep. But the problem is most of us are not asleep. Most of us are awake, and it is when we are awake that we find ourselves in trouble. If you were to go back to Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, you find those five books of the law, don't you? And I've read them many times, and they tend to be a little bit confusing. Those laws are confusing because they seem to apply to so many things that don't apply to my life today, like slavery and the kind of worship, the ceremonial worship that goes on in church and so forth and so on. But if I were alive at that time, they would have all made sense to me. Absolutely every single one of them. And I would have understood details about them that are left out in the Scripture today. They dealt with civil conflicts, religious worship, and they are the guiding laws that are to affect our lives. Take with me just for a moment. I just want you to think. What are the Ten Commandments? Can you think of them with me for a moment? Do you know them all? Just think about it. I don't mean all the... remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, and six days such labor and do all your work, and your manservant, your maidservant, your ox, your ass. No, I just mean the simple, specific commandments, the ten of them. What are they? The first four, as you know, because Matthew tells us about that in other places in the Gospel. They're broken down into two great principles. You know what those great principles are? Number one, you are to love whom? You are to love our God, our Father. And that makes sense. The last six, we are to show love toward our neighbor and toward our community. And we get confused sometimes because of the legal aspects of all these laws. Let me give you an illustration of this, because you know you can legally keep the law, and that is as we should. But what's important is that the laws are an expression of love, ultimately. And I'm not going to go into all of that, but every single one of God's principles are an expression of love. And let me illustrate that to you. The law says that I'm not supposed to take a gun or take a vehicle, and I'm not supposed to kill anybody. I am not to do any murder. Put that into love, would you? In other words, how does that, yes, I can do that. All I have to do is not kill someone. That means don't be doing it in my mind and all these other things. But how do I transfer that into the principle of love, which is even better for our community? That means that I will go out of my way. If I transfer the principle of not killing into love, it means that I will go out of my way to even help my enemy. And that's really tough. That's the reason why I'm telling you, it is difficult to keep the commandments perfectly. But does that mean that because we don't, that we fail utterly and miserably? Absolutely not. God's people are to be a righteous people. There are a couple of little things that are contained in the book of Exodus that I want you to see. That as reading through this and preparing for the sermon, that really just jumped out at me. And I thought, boy, my attitude towards God's law really does make a difference in how God reacts toward me. Now think about that. There is no more important relationship, is there, than the relationship that we have with our Father in heaven and with Jesus Christ. Let's not leave him out either. The God family. Would you do anything intentionally to separate yourself from the Father? I doubt you would. And yet it's so easy to do, and I want you to see that. Let's come back to the book of Exodus then. And there are a couple places I want you to see. Let's go to Exodus chapter 19 to begin. As you're turning there, I want you to think about some of these principles that I've talked to you about. And I want to present you with some difficulties. And I want you to tell me what you're going to do. The answers are contained inside the law. But sometimes we're confused because we're not familiar enough with that law. We don't think upon God's law enough. You know, we are admonished to give, and there's a principle of giving. There's no question about that. But what if you have two people who have identical needs, and each of them needs a dollar, and you only have $1? Who do you give your dollar to? I mean, you've got it to give. There are two people with identical needs. Who do you give that dollar to? How do you decide? Or do you decide not to give either the dollar? What do you do with that? Now, let me make it a little more complicated. Let's say that it's a matter of life and death. Let's say you are a physician. Let's say it's an extreme circumstance, and it seems like these things come to play in extreme circumstances just as much as they do in our daily living. Let's say that you are a physician, and you have some medicine that will save someone's life, and yet there are two young girls who have a disease that's going to kill them. You only have enough medicine for one. What do you do? What do you do? How do you decide? You know, it's possible on the road to Jericho for two people to be in trouble, not just one. How do you know who to help, or when to help, or why not to help? These are things that we run into in life that cause us to stumble, but we can take our advice and our direction from the law, from God's teachings. We're going to spend a little bit of time looking at those things here in a moment. Back to Exodus chapter 19. Oh, it's a long story. What's important, and most of you probably have it marked up in your Bible, it's a fascinating story. Isn't it intriguing to know that of all the prophets, Moses was an individual who was given the unbelievable opportunity to talk with God? Can you believe that? Just literally to talk with him. And he saw him on a mountain, and you know the story. Can you imagine what that was like? I think we forget the significance of that sometimes. What it would have been like for Moses to have been up on the mountain talking to God. Now, holding your place there in Exodus 19, I want you to turn back to Exodus chapter 3. And this is one of the little things I want you to index away because I'm going to draw your attention to it later on. Exodus chapter 3. Remember when God is beginning to deal with the children of Israel. He makes an interesting statement here. He's trying to encourage Moses, who needs all sorts of encouragement. And he says in verse 7, "The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I've come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land unto a good land, and a large, and a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, the Amorites, and so forth. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me. I have also seen the oppression therewith the Egyptians oppressed them." Now this is the verse I wanted you to see. "Come now, therefore, and I will send you unto Pharaoh, that you may bring forth," who? "My people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." Later on, I'm going to show you that God doesn't call us or call them my people anymore. And you know why he doesn't? Because they rebelled against his law, and he told Moses, they are your people. That's a little bit unsettling to me. Don't you want to be one of God's people, my people? I'd much rather be referred to rather than a people who belongs your people. I want to be one of God's people. So when he looks at me, he says, there's Charles, one of my children. I don't want to get anything to get in the way of that. But something did get in the way of that, and you'll see that. Well, we don't really have the time here to go through all of Exodus chapter 19. What's interesting here is that the children of Israel decided that whatever God said, they said, oh, that we will do. Absolutely. You don't have to worry about it. We're going to do it. Then we have the giving of the Decalogue in Exodus chapter 20, and there are those laws. And if you don't have them marked, you might just do that very quickly. And I'll just give you the brief wording on it. Verse 3, don't have any other gods before me. That's what he said. And that made sense because the children of Israel were being brought out of the land of Egypt where there are all sorts of unbelievable gods. The god of the flies, the god of the moon, the god of the sun, the god of fertility. He said, don't you have any other gods before me. If you read the story later on, one of the reasons why God is so disturbed, he gives this Decalogue, and the people of Israel say, whatever you want us to do, God, that we will do. And then you know what they do? They go out in Exodus chapter 32, and they build a calf, a golden calf. And what's ironic about it, they bow down to that golden calf. And yet, the second commandment of verse 4 says, don't you make you any graven image. Don't bow down to it. And just a few chapters later, we're going to find them not bowing down to God at the Mount Sinai, where there's this incredible storm of thunder and a dark cloud and an ominous cloud, but they're down there reveling and carrying on and bowing down to a golden calf. And God just before that had said, don't do that. And that changed things. He says, you're not my people anymore. You're Moses' people. There's another thing I'll show you later on that changes. You know what that is? Up to the time of that event, God himself led the children of Israel. After the rebellion, he didn't lead them anymore. He let his angel lead them. Isn't that something? Two little things have changed. You're not my people any longer. You're Moses' brethren. And I'm not going to lead you anymore. My angel will lead you. Now, how do you want it? How do I want it? Well, I want to be one of God's children. And in every turn of the road, I want God to lead me as personally and intimately and directly as he can. Now, please don't misunderstand. If an angel is to lead me, that so be it. I'm not going to say, well, that won't work either. But I'm going to say, I like the idea of God as directly involved with me as he can be. Well, let's turn now to Exodus chapter 24, this narrative. And as we approach the days of unleavened bread and the Passover, it might be well for all of us to read through these things and familiarize ourselves with the story. It's rather fascinating. Exodus chapter 24, again, the long chapter here, dealing with God working with Moses. And basically, God says that he is going to give Moses the tablets of stones with the commandments that are written on them. Now, let's talk for a moment about all those do's and don'ts, the shouts and shout nots, the Ten Commandments. I didn't read all the commandments, by the way. You'll have to go back and do that. Got away from that. Is there any question about what God's will is for his people? Thou shalt not commit murder. There's not any question about that, is it? These are the laws that God wrote with his own fingers. Didn't he? He did. He wrote them with his own fingers. I think about you want to talk about the message from God Almighty, which was the message of how to live a happy and profitable and moral life. Here they are, these 10 principles. And yet our societies, I've already witnessed to you, has strayed so far away from those things. Well, here in Exodus chapter 24, we would notice that Moses went up onto the mountain, if you want to just begin reading here in verse 12. The Lord said unto Moses, come up to me unto the mountain and be there, and I will give you tables of stone and a law and commandments which I have written that you may teach them. When 77%, at least of those surveyed, said they don't even think it's important to keep the Sabbath day, not even knowing what the right day is, we've fallen down. Someone is not teaching God's laws correctly, or enough, or sufficiently. Or people aren't motivated to go to church, and possibly that's true as well. Maybe it's become too much of a video world, electronic world, and just sit at home and watch the TV, and if you don't like that, you just flick along. I don't know what it is, but it's alarming that people have strayed so far from God's teachings. We are to teach God's laws, all 10 of them. Moses rose up, and his minister or his servant Joshua, and Moses went up into the mountain of God. And he said unto the elders, tarry you here for us until we come unto you, and behold, Aaron and Ur are with you. Now, I thought this was interesting when I read this story. Isn't it significant in this little statement in verse 14 that people never change? He said again, behold, Aaron and Ur are with you, so that if any man has a matter to do, let him come unto you. What that basically says is that people are still carrying on and are fighting and need solutions to their problems. Okay, they can come to these two. We won't leave you without counsel. So there they were, the very foot of a mountain of God, with the thundering and the rumblings and the voice of God. And the people had said, oh, Moses, we don't want to hear you. You go communicate to God for us. We're scared. We're frightened. And I think it's interesting there, too. Have you ever wondered why it was that the people of Israel needed to hear the voice of God before Moses ascended to Mount Sinai? Because then they knew they weren't Moses' words. They had recognition. They, too, heard the voice of God. They weren't Moses' laws. They were God's laws. There was no excuse. He goes on to say in verse 15, Moses went up into the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. The glory of the Lord abode upon Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. And the seventh day he called unto Moses out of the middle of the cloud, and the sight of the glory of the Lord was like a devouring fire on the top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. Moses went up into the middle of the cloud and got him up to the mountain, and Moses was in the mountain for 40 days and for 40 nights. He would come down from the mountain, and you know the story. You know what happened. It's carried over in chapter 32, if you want to turn over there very quickly. Moses comes down the mountain. He's very, very furious over what he sees, and so he takes the tablets of stone that have God's own handwriting on them, and he casts them down and he breaks them. And there's a lot of symbolism in that, because the covenant with God was broken by these people who were rebellious. And yet, to go to the very end of the story, you all know too that Moses went back up on the mountain, and he would fast for another 40 days. At which time then God would once again write His Word, His commandments, and His teachings on those tablets, and allow Moses to put them into the Ark of the Covenant. Those laws that were never to be forgotten. What a story we have in Exodus chapter 32. If you'll turn there with me. Let's turn to verse 7, and I want you to see this exchange. The Lord said unto Moses, get you down, for your people... Whose people? I already showed you in Exodus chapter 3, they were, at that time, whose people were they? My people. But now, where there's an outbreak of rebellion and sin, God says, get you down for whose people? Your people, which you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. If you take this word corrupted and you go back to check it in the Genesis account, there's a parallel here between what happened here and in Noah's day when there was such corruption. How quickly they turned away. How quickly they ran from God's laws. They have turned aside in verse 8. It says, quickly out of the way which I have commanded them, they have made them a molten calf and have worshipped it, and they have sacrificed thereunto, and said, these be your gods, O Israel, which have brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And God said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore, and this is something that I've wondered about this, and I don't know how just, you know, God's voice could break my eardrums, but what if God, and I won't be too dramatic about it, but God said, leave me alone! What would you do? Just think about that. God Almighty said, leave me alone. That's what He says here in this verse. Therefore, you let me alone. And I'm trying to get a hold of the kind of person that Moses must have been. And what I see contained in these chapters is Moses and God had an incredibly close relationship. So much so that Moses wouldn't have done like me, because I would have just fallen apart, I'm afraid. I just, leave me alone. I'd have just said, I'll see you later. I'm out of here. I'll pick up Joshua on the way down. I'm out. Leave me alone. Can you imagine such audacity on the part of a man like Moses? That my wrath may be hot against them, and that I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation. And then we know the story, and you've read through it, that Moses actually talked to God and reasoned to God, and God changed his mind. It says so in verse 14. The Lord repented of the evil which he thought to do unto his people. I see a lot in this because it shows me, even in the worst of times, when I may have misunderstood God's will, that I can approach God's throne, and he can understand, and he will understand, and he will do things that I might not expect him to do. He might even change what he was going to do because of my talking with him, my conversing with him. He certainly did that for the children of Israel. Well, then you know the story in verse 15. I hope you know the story. The problem here is that you read these verses and you get mixed up with the movie The Ten Commandments. Most of us have seen that movie so many times that we read these verses and we see Charlton Heston, and he's up there and he goes, and he throws those tablets down there. So try to put that out of your mind to some degree and just read the biblical account as to what occurred here. Moses does come down, and as you know, he was very angry with the children of Israel. He was furious with them, and he broke those tablets, and he cast them down. And then the children of Israel were made to grind up that golden calf, and it was in the powder, and it was put into water, and they had to drink that. They said in verse 23, "For they said unto me," this is Aaron talking, "make us gods which shall go before us." And yet we had already read the commandments, and the commandments said, "Don't you have any gods before me?" And yet they made this golden calf. And they were worshiping that. People were naked in verse 25. There was this orgy going on. People had to lose their lives. Then verse 30. "It came to pass on the morrow that Moses said unto the people, you have sinned a great sin. And now I will go up unto the Lord, and peradventure I shall make an atonement for your sin. And Moses returned unto the Lord and said, oh, this people have sinned a great sin and have made them gods of gold." And then he talks, he said, "Yet now if you wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray you, out of the book which you have written." And the Lord said to Moses, "Whosoever has sinned against me, him will I blot out of my book. Therefore now go, lead the people," no longer my people, "lead the people unto the place of which I have spoken unto you. Behold, my angel will lead you now." He changed things. Do we sense in these little subtleties the God's response to iniquity and discarding his laws and his principles? You know, God, it really boils down to something that's very simple. It doesn't need to be overly dramatized. It's just simple. If you want to have the best life you can, live by God's laws. Don't flirt with the edges of them. Don't try to dig up around the outskirts of them to find out the gray areas. Just live by God's laws. And you'll have as good a relationship with God as possible. You see, we're all limited by our circumstances. I understand that. There are some people who are just able to have more because maybe they inherited, maybe they've been blessed, maybe they got lucky. I don't know all the circumstances. But there's no good to be gained by looking about what we don't have. Let's look at what we do have. If I had a map out in front of me, and we do have a map, you know, it's a map of our lives. Sometimes, frankly, I don't know which way to go. Have you ever experienced that? I just don't know what to do. I know always to give thanksgiving and to be appreciative. I've got that. But when it comes to making decisions, important decisions in my life, sometimes I just don't know. But this map of life is given direction with God's laws. We just have to go back and dwell upon God's laws and see the principles that are there. Because when we really study it, it's quite clear what God would have us to do. These commands are the standard for our lives. Now, some will say that these commandments were given to other people, people with strange customs and a different language, and they were very much unlike us. One of the things I know is that when, let me ask you this, with the talk about a decision we have to face. When Moses was given the Ten Commandments and was on the mountain with God, one thing that he did not face was this decision. Whether or not, like we heard this past week in our prayer session, someone would have to make the decision to remove a loved one off of life support. What a decision. Think about that. Here's a loved one. They may be in a coma. They may have been in a coma for 5 days, maybe 5 weeks, maybe 5 years. You know, we heard this incredible story here not too long ago of an individual who had been in a coma, for many, many years, and all of a sudden came out of his coma and began to talk and converse with his loved ones, and yet went back into the coma and has never yet come out of it. Now, you think about that decision. Because I'll tell you something, when Moses was up on Mount Sinai talking to God, he was not aware of the fact that one day someone would have to make that kind of decision because they could be on life support forever and ever and ever. That's an important decision. How about the decision if you have a child or maybe yourself or your mate is involved in an automobile accident and they need an organ transplant? I don't think Moses had that in mind when he was before God on Mount Sinai. We have it in our situation today. What would you do? And then, you know, we talked about the situation about cloning. What's your position on cloning? You think Moses had any idea cloning would one day would exist in the 20th century? Now, here is our responsibility. Here's our assignment. We are given certain facts, are we not? We're given facts and information and knowledge. Along with that, you are given intellect. You're given a mind to think and reason with. Then you are given insight, when this is the most important, the insight that comes from the Holy Word of God, and you are to make those decisions. These commands were given to to Moses on Mount Sinai. Our responsibility is let's not leave them there. This is sort of a little bit of an illustration. The people do tend to just leave them up on Mount Sinai because some and other, we can't do those things. So our responsibility is to bring them off of Mount Sinai and to put them in practical use in our everyday life. I have this little slogan I've been using a lot lately. It'll probably play out one of these days. It's very simple. If you want to have a better world, be a better person. And I know how to be a better person. It's right in here. It all goes back to those ten commandments, those 10 laws. Let me illustrate another thing to you now, just to make you think. When I read those Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the law, the Torah, there's lots of commands in there. And yet they are commands that are not for me. For example, there is not a command for me to take my daughter and go to a mountain and sacrifice her. There was a command for Isaac and Abraham, right? That doesn't apply to me. And we've all always said, well, I hope that that'll never apply to me in my situation. That seems to be beyond what I want to ever tackle. There are abiding principles and abiding laws that we must face every single day. If we make the right choices, it makes for a better Christian community. If we make the wrong, it only makes things worse. Let me illustrate that now. I'll use my own family. Since my children aren't home, I can use my daughters. But you know how it is when teenagers want to be up and around, let's say age 16, 17, 18. What do they want to do right off the bat? They want to go out and get in trouble. No, not necessarily, but they want to drive a car. And I remember going through this, and I decided that I had a rule. One of my rules was, on Saturday night, is that my children could not be out beyond midnight. That's just a rule. I'm sorry. That wasn't God's rule. That wasn't anybody's rule except my rule. It was specific. It was from dad to daughter. It was direct. It didn't mean it applied to your household, so that was a command directed at my daughter. And let me tell you a law that applied to everyone the next morning. Let's be hypothetical. Let's say that the instruction was, you be home by midnight on Saturday night, and when you come back, you know, you got to be back. Have the car in at midnight. All right? And then I happen to know that she doesn't come back until 1:30. What's very important now is what happens the next day when I look at her and I say, tell me why you weren't home at midnight. Now we're dealing with a universal and abiding law because we're talking about truth. And truth is universal. If she lies to me, what has she done? She has betrayed my trust. She has also then learned a habit which will impair her ability, because she might get away with it, to function correctly in society. Because, you know, once a person gets away with a lie, you know what they'll most likely do again? Isn't this true? They'll lie again. Once a person gets away from stealing or gets away with it, you know what they'll do again? They'll do it and do it and do it and do it until they finally get caught, and then they get in prison, they come out, and they still do it. I've wondered about little things just as insignificant as this. Why is it down in Florida a couple of months ago when that Brinks truck spilled over and all that money rolled out of the back end of that truck, and I guess scores of people, at least dozens of people, were able to get their hands on that money? And the last time I heard, out of all those people who were able to gather up those flying dollar bills and all that loose change, only one little boy turned his money in. Now, how do you explain that? What do we do with that? You see, they broke. There was an abiding general law that was broken there. You shouldn't steal. And, of course, I was pleased to learn that the little boy was rewarded for turning his little fistful of money back in. It was so appropriate. Now, let's not be confused by the specific laws that were directed at individuals in the Old Testament, or in the New Testament for that matter. Let's be aware of the general principles which are contained in the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue. They apply to every aspect of our law, of our lives. Let me ask you another thing. Do you think that when Moses was up on Mount Sinai and he came off and he began to tell the children of Israel God's laws, do you think they were surprised? Do you think the children of Israel were surprised even a little bit? I don't think so. I don't think there was 1 ounce of novelty in the commandments that were given to the children of Israel. I think the children of Israel knew that they shouldn't steal, shouldn't lie, shouldn't have other gods. I think they knew those things. There should be no surprise for our society today. And yet we rationalize, we are duplistic, we deal with deception, and frankly, we have just sheer stupidity regarding God's laws. Not to mention, what really is a problem for all of us are those occasions when our will is so weak and we're torn. Now, it takes all of our determination and our righteousness to do the best that we can in obeying God's laws. I want to ask all of you to take God's laws, if you haven't done this, take them off the mountaintop and bring them into the streets where you live, into your home, into your neighborhood, into your community. I opened the sermon by saying that it doesn't take a lot of heroism to keep God's laws. That's true. It probably doesn't. It has been suggested, however, that there will not be very many heroes in our age today. And I'm going to play on this word a little bit. Because what does it mean to be a hero? I think a hero is someone who does something that's unexpected. It's a standout. Let me give you some illustrations of those. Because they're not, like happened this past week, the kind of hero, and this kind of thing really worries me, is where a basketball player is getting paid millions and millions and millions of dollars, and yet he chokes his coach, has marks on the coach's neck, and yet it's as if nothing happened. I'm wondering what kind of a hero that is, what kind of a message that sends to our children. Remember, as I close, there are two great principles, and they are contained in the law. They're over in Matthew 22, and you know them, so I don't need to have you turn there. Those first four, as I've mentioned to you already, say, love God. It's very simple. The reason why we gather together on the Sabbath day here is because it's an expression of remembering God, our Father. You may not take it seriously, though I think most of you do, but if you don't take God seriously, you're not going to be one of those, he says, my children. Moses' children? Whose children? I don't know, but I'd be much more comfortable with mine. And also, what you do will affect the degree to which he is personally involved with you, because God has no interest in leading those who are rebelling against him. Remember, he said to Moses, get away from me, leave me alone, until his wrath with some another brought to be arrested. The second is to love our neighbors as ourselves. That's pretty tough sometimes. That's something that's a real challenge. But we must do that as well. To do it is to be heroic, because so few are able to manage it. Your faith, your biblical faith, creates a hero. Let me give you some illustrations of those. What do you think about the nurses who devote their lives to caring for the sick, regardless of how much money they get? What do you think about the parents who sacrifice for their children's education and never look back and just know it was the right thing to do? What do you think about the business people who know how to create wealth and they use it for the benefit of their local community? And that's good, isn't it? So long as it's not abused. How about these heroes? Children who take care of their parents when their parents are old. Today, what do people want to do? They violate the fifth commandment. That's a whole new subject. Honor your father and your mother, that the days that you have upon the land may be long. Now, those are heroes, children who take care of their parents in their old age. How about employers who take care of their workers? Really take care of them. And employees who throw in that little bit of extra into their company and allow it to become successful. And then I like this one. This is a hero. How about the person who will go next door and help their neighbor fix their roof? No great big thing. Pretty important, though. Makes our community work a little bit better. All of these go back to the Decalogue. All these go back to the laws that God gave to us. All these take us back to when God was with Moses, and God and Moses were the children of Israel, and God told them how to have a good and happy and the best life they could have. If you want to have a better life, be a better person. This is the way to do it. And along the way, we just might be fortunate enough, if we adhere to these teaching and these principles, we know how important they are, we put them, as it were, as frontless between our very eyes, and they guide us in our thinking, our decisions, and our love, and our emotions. And God Almighty, who can thunder and break our ears, will look upon us and say, "Those are my people. Oh, what a heart in them to obey my laws. I can't wait to be with them in my kingdom."